that majority of the audience is waiting for. I'll make the motion for this in terms of the Talented and Gifted Program Plan, and it is revised per the superintendent. I move that the board approve the MMSD Talented and Gifted Program Plan as proposed as revised Appendix LL23 dated August 17, 2009, with the intent that any district funding commitments suggested, recommended by the board, by the plan, will be proposed for possible approval as the budget amendments or as part of a future annual budgetary proposal.
Second.
Is a motion and a second. Any discussion on that? Ms. Mathiak.
I'd like to offer a friendly amendment. This afternoon, I think it's a friendly amendment. This afternoon we received from the superintendent a sort of list and outline of professional development for TAG staff, and I would like to amend the motion to include that document as part of the plan as approved.
I don't have a problem with that, Superintendent.
I do not have a problem with that, with the understanding that, you know, when we do the updates during the year, we can report out, and then we would look at any recommended changes for the following year at the end of the year, because there may be new things that we would look at doing for the next year. But I'm more than fine with what suggests. Yep. I'm good with that.
Superintendent, do you have that document in front of you?
I do. I have some additional copies of it.
Maybe, and if you don't mind, Ms. Passman, reading or someone else reading it, I have a cold and I just sound terrible. I sound terrible on the mic.
Oh, it's so bad.
Thank you.
Okay, I will. To add, you're talking about the TAG action item professional development, Ms. Mathiak, okay. To add greater specificity to the proposed TAG plan action item related to professional development for TAG staff during the 2009-10 school year, we will, one, organize a series of professional development seminars with local experts, for example, UW-Whitewater Professor Pam Klinkenbeard, DPI consultant. Two, participate in local and/or national workshops and or conferences focused on TAG research, best practices, and strategies. Three, enroll in specific face-to-face or online courses to strengthen knowledge and understanding of TAG research and best practice. Example, the NAGC professional development sessions. And four, incorporate discussions around talented and gifted current research, best practice, and literature in weekly staff meetings.
Thank you very much, Ms. Passman. Just so people who are watching or listening, we have a motion that's on the table right now in terms of the Talented and Gifted Program Plan that was revised from last week, and we are also adding a component, which is a friendly amendment by Ms. Mathiak regarding professional development, which has been developed by the superintendent. Sounds good to me. Any questions regarding this motion?
Mr. Winston, can you ask if there are any objections to the amendment?
Are there any objections to the amendment?
Okay.
No.
Seeing none.
Okay.
Ms. Moss, followed by Ms. Passman.
Yeah, I think that most aspects of this plan are great. In fact, the vast majority of the plan is very well, very much needed, and I think that it's a good direction for us to go. I have some questions about also about the cluster grouping. I think that in this revised document, it's written a little bit differently from the previous. I think it's a little more specific. Is that right?
That is right, and it's written that way because there was a call for a greater definition of what cluster grouping would be.
Okay.
So that's why we did what we did.
Okay, and so I have, I had thought that when we were looking at the draft, that the idea of cluster grouping was going to be kept kind of open as an idea for us to investigate or to look into further and come up with a definition later. But when I saw that, I have some questions about that specific definition. One of them is that the number of children that you're talking about clustering was around six children, and it seems to me that if you're clustering six children in a class of 15, that that's a large proportion of that class that you're going to have, you know, one kind of homogeneous type of child, or, I mean, that's the wrong thing, it's the wrong way to put it, but level of learning in one class. And I just don't know, I kind of want to go on and explain my thinking. I understand now that there are three levels of talented and gifted. There are three levels of identification. Thank you. And so I'm wondering, does that mean that we would have, out of the entire second grade, are we going to have all of the brightest, absolutely genius children who are working at three grade levels above where they are in one class? Or are you going to take kids who are along that whole spectrum of talented and gifted and cluster them in that one class? Because then that's going to be a whole different kind of environment for all the other children, for the teachers, and for those children. So
I don't know. Well, this is on. I'm not sure what you're referring to as the number of six, because when I met with Lisa Wachtel, we were talking about the way that we place children in elementary classrooms, which we've had in place for about 8 years. And so the way that we do that is we use three criteria. We use the instructional needs of the students, peer relationships, and social-emotional needs of the students.
Right.
And this has gone through legal, and so we've been using this. And so when we look at clustering students, what we try to do is balance each classroom with these three areas. And I know that somebody just spoke about the emotional needs of the children being met, and we think it's important for children to have peers that they can relate to in a classroom, which is also friendship. So each classroom teacher has a form that they basically complete on their child. And so when we were talking about clustering can help happen by putting a percentage. And so right now we use a percentage of about 30% cluster for children with special educational needs. We also use a clustering for ESL, which is around 40% because our ratio is higher. And so when we were looking at ESL, we were also saying, or when we were looking at TAG, we were also saying that it should not be more than 30% of a classroom again. But then the delicate piece is that clustering, because oftentimes it may be in a school where we might only have one child in fourth grade identified as special, as a child with talented and gifted needs, as we define that. And so in parts of it, it has to be looking at the number of children available within that grade level. But what we do is look at that academic placement and make sure that there's a balance of needs in the classroom. That's where the cluster comes in. So it'll vary from school to school, grade level to grade level, depending on the number of children that we have in that area. But we also want to strike a balance, because you're right, classrooms can look very different if we cluster too high or too low. And so using that balance of academic need is what we've been using. And we have a chart system that we use and that we've been using. And so when Lisa and I were talking about the clustering, and this often comes to my office, is that there might be, you know, four children or six children in a certain grade level that parents have identified. And oftentimes what we try to do is have teachers team teach together, and that's becoming more and more prevalent in the elementary classrooms. And so a teacher may have on their caseload of 15, two children that might be identified as talented and gifted in one classroom, and he or she is teaching with another teacher that also has 15 children and might have four. So that becomes a cluster, or might have two. So that becomes a cluster of four. And then you strike that balance of close to 30%. So it really varies, but we do pay attention to this. And since we've had these conversations this summer, you know, I will be talking to the principals about really paying attention to that, because sometimes what happens when we've tried to strike the balance is that we may have in a fourth grade classroom one TAG child in this classroom, one in this classroom, one in this classroom, one in this classroom, and that's what we want to avoid. We want to cluster more so that we can have reading groups and various groups more appropriate. Does that answer your question in a long about
It does. It sounds better. I wonder, I know I got the six from the Talented and Gifted Programming Glossary. It says typically five or six gifted students with similar needs, talents, abilities, or interests yeah. are clustered in the same classroom.
And
that's where I got that number.
And that could work for a class size of fourth and fifth grade. We have a class size of 1 to 25, so that would be more reasonable for that. But in a SAGE classroom, it wouldn't be appropriate.
okay.
as you had said.
Okay.
I think that definition came out of the field, and it likely isn't SAGE-sensitive.
Yeah, okay. It was from the research that Lisa had done, because she pulled from several research what is an ultimate group size, and that kept coming up, the 5 to 8.
Okay, well, I wonder if there are people out there who read this and might think, you know, we're going to have 6 kids in our 15-child class mm-hmm. who are all going to be talented and gifted kids. And so when it comes up to next year, they're going to be upset because mm-hmm. their child might not be in a class of 6 children
sure.
clustered. So, and my other question was, I know we're that I can see that with academics, when you're talking about leadership skills, surely you wouldn't put all the leaders in one class. You wouldn't be clustering kids based on leadership potential. I just wonder how that's all going to play out also.
Well, and I think that's as much part of this concept called flexible grouping mm-hmm. as well, where the grouping is based on, you know, some children may have academic strength in math. Another group of kids may have strength in leadership area. And so, you know, this whole notion of special learning projects, we have to think about flexible grouping mm-hmm. of children as well. The other thing I wanted to add is that there are examples of these practices in our district mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. and we also want to be able to take the time to do the right professional development because there are good practices, as with anything else, and there are problematic practices, and we need to ensure that we are going forward and implementing this consistent with good practices in this area. Mm-hmm. But I think that concept may fit as well with that notion of flexible grouping as it would be with cluster grouping around defined academic abilities.
Okay, and one more, Mr. Hughes, if you don't mind. Okay, and so to go back to part of my first question, when you're talking about clustering students based on their identification as talented and gifted, are you talking about, I guess we haven't really decided, or maybe I just don't know, what does that mean? Does that mean top 15%? Does that mean top 5%? So do we mix, I mean, what's weighted in that placement? Is it... we need to put all of the kids who are especially bright in math in one class and kind of that would outweigh their other needs or I'm not really being clear. I guess would the clusters be more narrowly academic or would you be looking at the whole child in grouping kids based on talented, gifted identification?
The areas that we have, we cluster children right now because we tend to, and as Dan said, we have very fine examples about that. Where we run into problems when there's only 2 children in a grade level or 1 child in a grade level, predominantly. So when we look at the areas, we look at writing, we look at math, and we look at reading, and those are the 3 areas that we focus on in the academic area. We have never had an instrument that looked at leadership, so we haven't gotten there, and that's going to be new territory for us to explore. Mm-hmm. But these are the 3 academic areas that we look at when we cluster. And so sometimes it's that one strand. It might be the reading. We have children that text reading levels that are clearly identified as outliers in their classroom. And then other times we have math students with that same. And so we use report card indicators as well as text reading levels, and we use the current information that we have.
And I think in addition, we also have to look at, and the plan calls for this, attention to the social-emotional mm-hmm. needs of a child
right.
and making sure that whatever decisions are made, whether it's cluster grouping, flexible grouping, or, you know, heterogeneous grouping, are made based on the full picture of mm-hmm. the children. Because some children are ready for a particular experience, you know, with a group, and others may not be. And so, it really comes down to, and I think our strategic plan is responsive on this whole notion of individual learning plans for all kids, you know, where we can do a better job of defining the unique needs of all kids. But, again, I just want to underscore that whole area of social-emotional development has to be put into the mix as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I believe Mr. Hughes... I had a question.
Yeah, thank you. I just had a brief clarification question. I was not sure, when listening to what you're saying, the extent to which what the plan includes in terms of cluster grouping represents a new direction for the school district or whether it's simply an embodiment of what is already current practice.
You know, from my perspective, when I mentioned earlier there is cluster grouping, I don't think it's to the level that this plan calls for.
That's right.
So I think that needs to be pointed out. We need to build capacity to implement cluster grouping in appropriate ways. And I can't underscore enough, there are good practices and there are problematic practices. And so, you know, I don't want to leave you nor our public feeling when I made that statement that all the opportunities that present themselves for cluster grouping are currently being implemented, because that's not the case. We do need to build more capacity.
Thank you.
Ms. Passman, followed by Ms. Mathiak.
Yeah. I just want to follow up on something that
we were discussing last time, and that was about credentials for teachers. And I see the four steps here, and I know they're all sort of saying that, but how do we encourage staff to get credentialed in tags? And can we post jobs saying tags? You should have some tags credentials. How do we do this? I know they're few and far between out there. I know that. I know, and if we limit ourselves, we probably would get no one. But how do we do these things so that we get more and more people in teaching and learning that in this department that know what they're doing?
You know, my own view on this is that, and I think it is consistent with the amendment tonight, is that I believe that we're going to have to commit to ongoing professional development.
All right, so it's just that.
So that's one piece.
Okay.
The other piece is, you know, we can work with HR to look at this notion of desired qualifications. The problem with the required qualifications, there are so few tag certifications that are out there,
right,
that I wouldn't
right
want to foreclose our ability to fill these positions. But I don't see a problem with this whole notion of desired qualifications.
Okay. All right. Just as long as it's out there and we know that it's important. The other thing is there is supposed to be a mid-year status report and summary this January. So we will expect something that says how things are going and what we're doing and where we are. And I think that that's something we will all be looking for.
That's correct.
All right? Okay. That's all.
Ms. Mathiak.
I want to go back a little bit to the question of not so much whether we do cluster grouping or whether it's a good idea. I personally have experienced it and found it to be essential for lots and lots of reasons, including what we ask teachers to do in a given day. My question is more related to the issue of identification. As I've looked at the plan and read the documents, it's been my sense that we haven't identified systematically. And I think there's a myth that parents just sort of self-nominate and, you know, homini domini, now your kids take kid. When in fact most parents have gone through that process will tell you that you fight tooth and nail to get any acknowledgement that there's something different about your kid and it's not a bad thing. So I'm wondering, you know, in terms of the identification, whether you anticipate that some of the questions that are coming up tonight about clusters and other things are going to be informed by what happens when we start doing that systematic identification?
I would say absolutely yes. And, you know, earlier tonight there was reference to this pyramid model. And whether we call it a pyramid model or not, I think what we have to do through this identification process is be sensitive to the fact that not all TAG children are the same. And there is going to be a large number of kids that call for their needs being met in the classroom through differentiation and perhaps through cluster grouping practices. And then as you move up in that reference to the pyramid model, whether that continues to be used or not, there are, at the tip, there are children that need much more unique experiences. And so I think, and as we look at our programming options going forward, it's going to be based on, you know, some ideas of different groups of kids. I think the difference right now between what is referenced and I think what our perspective are two. One is we don't know yet what the DPI is going to come up with, and number two is attributing defined percentages to each of the groups. I mean, obviously the base, if you call it a pyramid, is going to have a higher percentage than the top, but we don't know those things yet. So our hesitancy is more is not. Well, let me say it this way. We believe there are going to be many more students identified. Mm-hmm. How many, we don't know. And they're going to be differentiated by that type of need, whether you call it a pyramid or if it's going to be something else. And I think just as we have a need to become in compliance with the DPI standard, we also want to make sure that, whatever they're going to come up with is something that we can be responsive to.
And am I correct in assuming that, part of that task of identification will also, or should we should expect it to address the issues of inclusion and equity, because by going through and systematically working to identify and using a broad range of indicators, we would pick up more mm-hmm. students from low-income families mm-hmm. and from underrepresented groups, mm-hmm. members of minority communities, ELL students, than we currently are identifying.
I absolutely agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
President Silvera.
Thanks. I just had a couple of comments. Thank you, Superintendent, for sending out the 4 points in advance. That was helpful. And for Ms. Mathiak for making the motion to, you know, or adding that to our motion. I think that's probably a very good way to move forward with that. I did have a couple of just quick questions to tie in with some of the comments we got about the underrepresented populations. I think probably adding gender to that definition probably does, I think, makes some sense, and would recommend that, if that's all right with the board and the superintendent, that we just expand the definition a little bit, because we've always, when we've been reviewing board goals in the past, when we're talking about math and you know, algebra, geometry, and the like, not only is it children of color, but it's also more males that seem to not be working as well through our system. So maybe I think it's important if we can highlight that.
And I don't have a problem with doing that. If you're okay, if we have data after our first year that would call for not having a gap there, that we would present that, because I just don't know what our current gap is in that area. But I'm okay with it for now.
I view it as more, you know, as you're going through the plan and you see that definition
right.
of groups, it's more,
right.
let's think about all of these.
Yeah, no, I understand.
All of these kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe when I first looked through the revised plan, I saw your definition of underrepresented populations or groups in the update. It did take me a little bit to find it in the plan. The first place I looked was the glossary.
Okay.
And there's no reference to it in that materials in the back, and maybe that would be helpful.
Okay.
So if people just get the plan and they're, and it doesn't have to be repeated throughout.
It might be a
way of
yep.
making sure people understand what's
yep.
going on.
No, I agree with our need to do that.
And that, thank you. I appreciate all the changes and the tweaks from last week.
So, Ms. Silver, do we have a request to amend the motion to include gender as a underrepresented?
What's the most straightforward way to do this?
To request to amend the motion to include gender. I think you can, as long as there's no objection from any individual board member. It's kind of a shortcut to a more formal amendment, but any board member should be able to call for a vote on an amendment if they wish.
Okay, I'll wait till the end in case there's anything else people want to change, then we don't have to keep doing it. Is that okay?
Yeah. Mr. Hughes.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate all the work that went into this plan. I just have a couple of brief comments. I think that the plan clearly represents helpful and necessary change in the district's direction, and this is an area that we've let kind of lay fallow for far too long. My concern when I look at it is I hope that we're not biting off more than we can chew here, at least in the short run. I look at the action steps, and you see the resources needed, and it's tag staff, tag staff, tag staff. We don't have a huge tag staff at the moment, and I frankly don't know how they're going to be able to do over the course of the next year what they already have to do on a day-to-day basis and take on all these responsibilities. So my fear is that perhaps we're being a little more aspirational than realistic in terms of what we're saying. Also, I'm concerned about how this is going to be implemented, to the extent that I think if you ask different people how they read the plan, you'd get a range of views as to the extent to which it does represent a change in how our schools operate and the extent to which it represents a logical outgrowth of current plans. And so I would recommend that the administration have a clear idea of how these action steps are to be implemented at the school level and provide a lot of leadership on that, because I think there will be a lot of difference in the receptiveness of individual schools to the changes that we will be adopting if we accept the plan. And so I think that I view this as a work in progress, and it's an important first step, and I'm very happy to see the emphasis on evaluation and assessment so that we can take looks and see the progress that we are making and if it is accomplishing what we want to and what we need to under the law, and we can make adjustments as soon as we can. So I'm happy to see that, and we'll be happy to support the plan.
Okay, any other questions regarding this? Okay, now, so we have a motion that's on the table with the added friendly amendment, and then we also have some, I want to say edits, because those are actually things regarding gender and an area in the glossary that states about our underrepresented students in the district. How shall we proceed with that?
Mr. Rowe, could just ask for a friendly amendment to the pending motion to include gender in the definition of underrepresented groups or the listing of underrepresented groups that will be looked at, and add the same definition to the glossary, I guess, is the other.
I will request a friendly amendment to address the issues just stated by Mr. Mallon.
And I take that as friendly. And I just want to ask, just because Ms. Lehman is back here, and she's working hard on these minutes. Ms. Lehman, did you get all that information? Okay. All right. Just want to know. All
and
right.
There's no objection?
No objection.
No objection for me.
Consider it amended.
Okay. Well, let us vote. All those in favor of the motion, amended motions, and the rest regarding the talented and gifted plan, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion passes 6-0.